Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
On this week's Fresnolandia podcast, we're featuring a live event Fresnoland hosted on Thursday, September 25th at Tioga Sequoia Brewing downtown on what Fresno can learn from LA's massive public transit expansion. You'll hear Danielle moderate a conversation with former LA mayor and current candidate for California governor Antonio Villaraigosa, who successfully championed Measure R in 2008, which helped kickstart a new generation of light rail lines across LA County. Denny Zane, the founder of Move LA, and a former Santa Monica mayor and city council member, and Fresno City Council member Miguel Arias.
Really excited for tonight. Of course, we also have our own backyard, Miguel Arias, City Council Miguel Arias. to kind of also a visionary in his own right in Fresno, to kind of bounce off, you know, what we're hearing from LA. So we're really glad to have you all. So again, if you don't know me, I'm Danielle Bergstrom. I'm the founder and editor and chief executive director of Fresnoland. We are a nonprofit newsroom covering Fresno and Madera counties. If you want to learn more about us, please go to our site, fresnoland.org. These types of events are only made possible because of our donors and members. I see many of our members and donors in the audience today, so thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for making this possible. Woo! And if you want to become a member, please go to our site at fresnoland.org/donate. And now I will introduce our esteemed panel. So I will start with Fresno City Council Member Miguel Arias to my left. Please give him applause. Miguel has served on the Fresno City Council since 2018. He's in his second term. Before that, he was a trustee for the State Center Community College District. He's held several roles with Fresno Unified School District and the United States Congress. Thank you, Miguel. To his left, we have Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa from Los Angeles. Yes, very excited. He is, if you didn't know, he's running for governor of California on the 2026 ballot. He served as mayor of Los Angeles from 2005 to 2013. He was also in the California State Assembly from 1994 to 2000 and served as the speaker of the assembly from 1998 to 2000, has held many other esteemed roles. He was an infrastructure advisor to the governor. We're so excited to have him. Thank you so much, Mayor Villaraigosa. And to his left, we have Denny Zane. Denny is the founder of Move LA, which is a coalition building organization in Los Angeles that has successfully helped spearhead four different ballot measures in Los Angeles County. He also served three terms, I believe, on the Santa Monica City Council. One of those was as mayor of Santa Monica in the 90s. Yes-ish. 88 to the 90s. Sorry, I don't have the precise dates. Really excited. During Denny's tenure on the Santa Monica City Council and as mayor, he led rent control initiatives and also was really the instigator behind the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica. So thank you, Denny, so much for being here. Okay, so the way this is going to work, we're going to have about 45 minutes to an hour discussion, and then we'll have time at the end for questions. So if you have questions, please hold them to the end. Mayor, I want to start with you. You ran for mayor in Los Angeles really with this vision initially of building a subway from the city to the sea, a city to Santa Monica. That's bold, and especially in a place that isn't necessarily known for having a really large transit vision. So what got you to a place where you felt like you could really cast that vision?
First of all, thank you for coming. And when I was sitting outside, I got here about 5 o'clock, there was nobody here. I got a little nervous, and now I know how you got him here. You're offering beer. I love it. I love it. And drink up, everybody. Sometimes people get glazed over, their eyes get glazed over when they talk about transit. Look, I took the bus at 5 years old when to shine shoes downtown. I lived in a place called City Terrace, about 5 miles away. I took the bus to school. My mother took the bus almost her whole life. So in the 1990s, I get appointed to the RTD board, And I said then, you know, we need a bus system. Everybody was talking about rail, if you remember back then. And I said, hold it. We want a first-class rail system with a second-class bus system. That doesn't work. We need a first-class bus system. So I sat on the RTD board and the MTA board for 3 years. I was the guy who pushed this whole issue of clean buses. If you remember back then, Zenny, we worked on that. And today, the Southern California MTA has the cleanest buses in the world in terms of all clean fuel buses. So when I ran for mayor, I said, dream with me. We're going to make LA, we're going to build the subway to the sea, and we're going to reimagine LA. So it wasn't just about moving people. In fact, I think that's what this is all about. It was really reimagining the city. A city that, when I was a kid, had a bus system that was, you know, and a streetcar system that was the envy of the West Coast. I mean, you could go from San Bernardino, Riverside, Orange County, all over Ventura to downtown LA. We dismantled that system. So I said, dream with me and reimagine what this city could look like. A city where we live, work, and play close to a transit place. And so we did, the subway to the sea was really a metaphor because it's never going to the sea, though the light rail line I did go to the sea. But the subway is going to end at Brentwood because ridership, just not enough ridership to substantiate, and you got a lot of rich people that live in that area. It's going to be really difficult to get them to do it. So it wasn't about just moving people. Because remember, we're the single, got more cars and freeways than anywhere in the world. It's a city that's, addicted to the single passenger automobile. So this notion of building a rail system didn't resonate until we said, let's reimagine what this town could look like. So Subway to the Sea was a metaphor, and really the transit effort that we did was all about reimagining the city and what it could look like. Example, when I became mayor, there were about 20,000 people downtown. By the time I left, there were 60,000, in no small part because of that rail system and bus system. We also have other innovative things, by the way. We have those red buses. What are they called? Rapid red buses that don't stop at every stop, stop at every six stops, and that move people in a big way. We have a bus way that we did, that I did during while I was mayor, the Orange Line that moves as many people as the light rail line. And so we use this transit to kind of get people to think about what LA could look like, and I think that's what you're doing. That's why I wanted to say that. In fact, today, at an event in Watts, I did a Turndy's, one of the biggest housing projects in the United States. And if you went there today, it's beautiful housing. You could be in Irvine, beautiful housing for people and mixed-use development. But it's all about reimagining, and that's what this is. And I think that's what you're here, reimagining what high-speed rail could do to Fresno. Reimagining what a light rail line could do to connect the great communities that surround the metropolitan area that's about a million people, I think, right? I think
1.3, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1.3. Mm-hmm. So that's really what it was, and that's why I wanted to be here, to join Miguel, my good friend, council president, and Denny, one of my heroes, he started like four or five. You said Move LA. He started about four or five organizations last time I looked. He's been around a bit, and somebody who's a real visionary.
And so you had this vision of figuring out how to move more people, how to, you know, increase mobility. And it ultimately culminated in what became Measure R, a sales tax that went on the 2008 ballot. Tell me a little bit about how you were able to sell a tax in the middle of a global recession, and how, what the messaging was that got people to buy into that vision.
Because remember, the subway to the sea was a metaphor. It wasn't literal. But it wasn't just that. I built more bike lanes than anybody in LA history. In fact, I did more bike lanes than I think all the mayors before me.
It's still happening,
my plan. We believe that we have to share the road. So it's developing more walkable neighborhoods. It's bikes. It's buses. It's light rail, subway, you know, subways where you have enough people for it. And it's, you know, high-speed rail. It's all of the above. That's the approach, all of the above. So the way I think we sold it was, we said that it was all of the above. We said it's not just about subways and light rail. It's about fixing your streets. You know, I synchronized every light in L.A. First time ever. And you wouldn't know it because we have so much traffic. But late at night, you feel it. You feel it when you go down Wilshire Boulevard or one of those streets, because it just, you get that green light and you go at the right, you know, about three to five miles over the speed limit, and you just catch them all. You catch them all the way up. And, you know, we sold a vision to improve mobility is what we did. It wasn't just subway. It wasn't just buses. It was the whole thing. And it was difficult because LA County is a very big county, and most of them resent LA. Well, you see that at a Dodger game or a Laker game. Beat LA, beat LA. Well, that's kind of how the rest of the city feels about the city of LA. So I had to sell it in the San Gabriel Valley. I had to sell it in the South Bay. I had to sell it all throughout. And this gentleman here helped us do it in a big way. Because, you know, everybody thinks they should be mayor. And some of the people want to hate the mayor, so you have emissaries out there and ambassadors who are selling it too. So it was a broad coalition. Labor was involved. Business was involved. And that's what I did. And I think, to be honest, if I have a skill set, it's bringing people together. It's bringing diverse constituencies, interest groups together to accomplish something, and that's how we did it.
Denny, you were sort of in the weeds of trying to stitch together people from smaller cities in LA County, the business groups, labor unions, environmental coalitions. How did you weave together people on the outside, and what were sort of the thorny obstacles you faced?
Thank you for asking. It's a great pleasure to be here. I have been here before, the Fulton Mall. Is so much like what the promenade was before it was the promenade. And I had come up to the Fulton Mall to investigate and to talk with people to see what was working and what wasn't working and so on. So there were lessons learned just up the street from here. So thank you very much for having me back. I do want to say that I think Antonio is actually presenting a kind of humble characterization of what he was doing and succeeding at. I first met him across the dais as I was testifying about how Metro should be moving to clean buses. And I thought we had little chance in that committee of getting it moving forward until Antonio said, this is what I think we should do. And he led the whole effort to convince that committee and the Metro board to make the shift to clean buses. Then he went to the legislature, became Speaker of the Assembly. I was the director of the Coalition for Clean Air. Didn't start it, but I was the executive director. And we had a campaign for trying to get alternatives to diesel supported in the legislature, and had come up with a coalition with of all people, the Trucking Association, and a buddy of mine who was a lobbyist in Sacramento, V. John White, hooks us up with Antonio. Antonio says, I'll carry the bill. He gets the Republican leadership of the Assembly, of the Senate, to agree to sponsor the bill. And this bill becomes the Carl Moyer Program, which is the state's largest, most significant effort to promote clean technology in the heavy-duty vehicle sector. And that was because he was able to build coalition with Republican leadership in the legislature to spend money on clean air. I had never heard of it before. But what that meant for me is that later, I would have been a council member and mayor in Santa Monica, and we were having a big traffic moment, and it was like 2006, but I knew Antonio was going to become mayor. And I knew that he was talking about the subway to the sea. And I knew that he meant it. And so I decided that I would devote about a third of my work life to trying to build a coalition to support the subway to the sea. In the course of that discussion, as we're moving forward, we convene a coalition in the building trades and in the labor movement. Just because Mary Elena Durazzo, Senator Durazzo, was president at the time, she and I had a relationship. She gave me the opportunity to pitch this idea to her membership, and they liked it. Then the chair of the Chamber of Commerce it was the Housing and Transportation Committee, Land Use and Transportation Committee, Dan Rosenfeld, he says, well, listen, I think my members would like this too. Can you come to our meeting? And there were like 35 organizations invited to this meeting to talk about a ballot measure for transportation. 34 showed up. They all showed up. There was something in the air happening here. I think it was Antonio's Subway to the Sea rap, frankly, that was creating an atmosphere of aspiration at that moment. And so we became the coalition. We were the outside game. He was working the leadership in the metro and the leadership in the region, the elected officials. We would be setting up the community meetings and the coalition building effort for him to come and pitch the Subway to the Sea vision, which we then all learned, we got to get 2/3 vote. How do we do that in Long Beach for a Wilshire subway? How do we get votes in San Gabriel Valley or the San Fernando Valley for a Wilshire subway? We've got to think bigger. We have to have projects in every part of the county. And that's when Metro, under his leadership, brought together Measure R and voted to put it on the ballot. It was very, very exciting. Yes, about a month before the election, the crash happened. We all thought, oh my God, there's little chance that we're going to get 2/3 vote for a half-cent sales tax in the middle of the greatest recession since the Great Depression. But we did. And we all credit Antonio's leadership for having made that happen. I'll take my piece of the credit for that. We were the outside game, but Antonio was the inspiration who gave us, the vision we needed to work hard and convene the coalition we needed. And so I want to say thank you very much. We went on to later, when Garcetti was the mayor, to stand up Measure M, which became the second sales tax measure. R had been 30-year measure. Measure M changed it, so they're both in perpetuity. There's about $2.5 billion a year now being generated in Los Angeles County for investment in transit. All of these projects that are happening, like the Wilshire subway, we're going to have 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 stations opening before the end of this year. At the airport at LAX, where we've never had a transit connection, we opened a transit station there about 6 months ago, and before the end of the year, the people mover, the aerial people mover, will be opening. It will be amazing this year, and all of it because Measure R and the right leadership and the right community leadership were in place at the right time.
How did you get, maybe this is a question for both of you, how did you get the business community to get on board with this? This is something we see in Fresno where a lot of business groups may be transit skeptics and not entirely sure why this is the right vision. So how did that work in LA?
You know, we have a fairly progressive business community for the most part. You know, we sold it on jobs. Look, this was the middle of the recession. We put more than 200,000 people to work in good union, middle class trade jobs. And so it was, you know, a catalyst for economic development, and we sold them on that. It was about jobs. You know, I think, you know, LA's got a historically a strong anti-growth movement, and we understood that with transit that we could create what Jerry Brown once called elegant density along transit lines. They bought into that. And, you know, I had a strong relationship, but, you know, he said it. Inside game. He worked the business community, but he particularly worked all those small cities. And when they wanted it, the business community bought in.
I would add one other thing that I've really appreciated more since. This was a moment of particularly dense traffic at that time. And it was for a very specific reason. This was the moment in time when Silicon Valley came to LA to marry Hollywood. And they were bringing an enormous and very affluent workforce with them. They were driving. And that was, I remember a day when the 10 freeway out just a block from my home was backed up to Lincoln. And I thought, oh, there must be an accident up the way. But it never stopped. Every day it was backed up to Lincoln like that. So there was a talk about traffic congestion on people's minds at that moment, too, on account of that.
And you know, just to feed on that, I didn't just do Measure R. I synchronized every light in the city. I stopped construction during the rush hour. I towed trucks on every major you know how people... It says no parking between 4 and 6, and they park anyway? Well, we towed them. And we had, I don't know, I forget what they were called, but tag team, something. Tiger teams, that's what I called them, tiger teams, because we would just tow all those cars. You know, we were focused on traffic in L.A., and so that was the other thing I sold all of this on. This will help the traffic. Now, all of you have been to LA. It hasn't really helped the traffic yet because we've got more people, and you know, we're addicted to the single passenger automobile. But we did a whole group of things. It did Ciclovia, you know, toward the end. You know, I said people are tired of the traffic, so we'd have a day. 250,000 people walking, skating, and on a bike. So we were, yeah, thanks for reminding me that. The traffic thing was also a big selling point to people.
You know, Antonio, the projects take time to build. The real, I think, revelation of the success of that moment, not just R, without R there never would have been M, but R and M together and that resource together, we will start seeing just this year, really, the major fulfillment of that aspiration. Projects are going to, there are four, I think, Wilshire subway stations that are going to open before the end of the year. And the aerial, I mean, it's going to be so much happening this year. But it also inspired a whole sort of model of civic engagement We have had three ballot measures that we have worked on for affordable housing. That revenue is really just starting. The city just released a notice of funding for $450 million for affordable housing. That's more than the city ever had under redevelopment in any year. And so we're going to be seeing in this next, I think, four-year period, where we're going to see is a rolling out of the vision of R and M together in a way we have not yet seen, and we're going to be seeing the rolling out of an affordable housing program at the same time that the city and county will have the resources to actually help prevent homelessness and to bring people who are homeless in. So I think the next 4 or 5 years, what we're going to see is the realization of the vision of Measure R in a Los Angeles that we have not yet seen. It will be, the heyday is ahead of us, is what I believe.
Miguel, I'd love for you to jump in. I know, right? It's fun. Like, oh, wow, we've got some work to do. Well, maybe you could talk a little bit more about where you feel like the work is for us in Fresno. Do we have a vision? What are the pieces of the puzzle that we need?
So we do have a vision, and I wanted to point out a couple of things before then. First, I want to thank Assemblymember Joaquin Arámbula. Dr. Arámbula is in the audience. He's the reason why there's really bad traffic downtown nowadays.
Thanks.
Everything's under construction thanks to the work that he did to secure hundreds of millions of dollars from the governor's office to reconstruct downtown. So thank you, Dr. Arámbula. But he's also the reason why there's hope in the world of public transportation and transportation in Fresno County. A couple years ago, Dr. Arámbula and a coalition of organizations and myself opposed the renewal of our transportation tax countywide initiative, because that renewal was essentially designed to continue the construction of freeways as a primary, purpose, and leaving, public transit, complete streets, safe routes to schools, pedestrian improvements, bike lanes out of the equation. So it took a lot of effort for us to oppose that renewal. It failed. As a result, tonight, just two blocks away, the Transportation for All Coalition, community organizations, mayors from the rural areas are having a discussion tonight on a new version of Measure C. And what they're looking at is a $7 billion, 30-year transportation tax initiative, but now they're looking at it completely different. And now the conversation is, how are we going to ensure that 60% of the money is for existing roadways in residential neighborhoods? Because everybody, as you know, Mayor, they want their road fixed. They're also looking at how much more public transit money do we need to ensure that in Fresno alone, last year we had 10 million bus trips a year. And part of our challenge is to remind people that at some point, everyone in this room is going to lose their driver's license, and you will depend on public transit. And we all are going to have kids that are going to depend on public transit before they have a driver's license. And that public transit needs to be as important as, single passenger vehicles. So that work is commencing. It's going to be difficult. We are battling some of the establishment groups like the Chamber of Commerce. But the conversation today has affirmed a few things. One is, as you guys mentioned, we used to do light rail before. In downtown Fresno, we still have blocks where the light rail is underneath the pavement. Secondly, the business community will come along. In our discussions with the historical established Chamber of Commerce and business communities, their only interest was jobs. They didn't care about the details. They didn't care about the project list. They care about the economic development, which means that it allowed room and space for other transportation experts to come in and start developing a vision for our future. And lastly, it is about moving people with a bigger vision as a county and as a city. So for me, this conversation has validated the lessons that we've learned, the political capital that we spent in treading a new direction for the county transportation for all kind of commitment, and also the need for us to continue down this path. We have a lot of examples, Mayor Villaraigosa and LA included, where it's been done before successfully. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just have to have the courage in local leadership to actually change the direction and pursue that direction with some rigor. So I also want to say thank you to Mayor. Today, he could have been politicking in Sacramento for, you know, support on the governorship, but he's in Fresno. It's not the first time he's done that. A couple years ago, when Dr. Joaquin Rambila was, you know, lobbying for the money, the former mayor of LA was there with the saying, Fresno deserves an investment. Fresno, too, deserves to be able to renovate, reinvest in their downtown. So I do appreciate that, Mayor, on behalf of Fresno.
No, we appreciate you being here very much. Miguel, I would love for you to hear your thoughts on this. You know, traffic is obviously the very real thing that gets LA residents to think about the way that they move in a different way and potentially pushes them into transit or to biking. We have some of the fastest commute times here in Fresno County across the U.S. And so what's the grind that people have when you're talking to your, you know, your constituents?
So in my 7 years on the council, here's been my biggest lesson learned. In every neighborhood meeting, the number one concern for folks is, can you slow traffic down in my neighborhood? I want my kids to be able to play outside. I want them to be able to ride the bike in the neighborhood. I want to be able to cross the street safely. At the exact same time, they ask me to speed up this, the traffic in somebody else's neighborhood so they can get to work and school faster, right? And so what I ask them is, you know, very openly, raise your hand if you want me to slow traffic down in your neighborhood. They all go up. Raise your hand if you want me to increase speeds in somebody else's neighborhood. They all raise their hand. So part of our conversation is to convey to them that Palm Avenue is a frontage of somebody else's home. And that we have built such a great freeway system that you can get to the most northern part of our city in 10 minutes. So if you want to go 55 and above, get on the freeway system, right? Leave the residential streets for kids to play on. But with that, what they've also said to us is, the current pedestrian infrastructure is not safe enough for our kids to actually utilize. So we have, this Monday, we started construction of Shields Avenue in front of Daly Elementary School. All the parents are complaining. Why are you fixing the street? You're making me late to work. You're making me late to drop off the kids.
That happened to me this week.
Yes, right? And I tell them, call somebody else. Because you were calling me last week on all the potholes on Shields Avenue and asking me when are you going to fix the street. So I think part of our task locally is to convey to people, if you want to maintain the 10-minute journey to North Fresno and South Fresno, if you want to slow traffic down in your residential neighborhood, then we need to invest in pedestrian infrastructure. We need to invest in public transit. Or else, in 10 years, these freeways will also be out of lanes. One last story I'll tell you is, in the last version of Measure C, we had this very last critical meeting on negotiating whether we're going to support it or oppose it. And in the room was myself, Assemblywoman Soria, Councilmember Maxwell, myself, and across the way, the mayor, the director of the County Transportation Authority, the director of the COG Transportation Authority. And we got to the point of public transit. And their comment with a straight face was, we see no value in public transit. We have never ridden a bus in our life, so we don't understand why we have to pay for it. The two transportation experts for the last 30 years in our community. And at that moment, we're like, okay, there's no negotiation. Right? And sure enough, after the failure, they retired and now there's an opportunity to have a different conversation led by different transportation experts and different community voices. But I think we're at a pivotal point in our city and our county that we're ready to make the next leap to be a big city and to be the largest urban center in the valley. And that means acting differently.
On that point, and I would love to hear from all of you on this, there's this frame that I've heard where, you know, people think that when you invest in transit, you're trying to get every single person to convert entirely away from driving. But the way that you've described it, Mayor, is, you know, you're also investing in synchronizing lights and, you know, it's a system that goes together. Could you talk a little bit more about how you get away from this sort of either or mentality that some people have?
Well, first of all, your vision for what a transportation, you know, network funding mechanism should look like. I mean, you talk to urban planners all over the country, they're going to say that's the way you do it. It's got to be multimodal. It's got to serve everyone. I loved your point, because I was a council member too. Oh, man. You know, I did more potholes. I think I did 13,000. Well, I did more potholes than the 12 years before me by 500. And I did it in 8 years. But I didn't just do that. I did a whole panoply of things. And I think you're hitting it on the head. They retired because they were thinking 19th century. We're not in the 19th century. We're in the 21st. And doing all of the above, I mean, I think that's what comes with experience too, by the way. You know, an all of the above approach to this is the way you do it. It's not just one way. So from my vantage point, I understood we had to speak to all of them. Now, having said that, I have seen places, let's say I just mentioned traffic calming. Well, traffic calming is important, particularly in small neighborhoods, but you can't have it everywhere, okay? Because you do need to move people. You know, bike lanes, like you said, it did more than anybody in the country. Anybody in the country. But there's some places where I see them now and I say, hold it. You just took a lane out. You know, one person, five people on a bike lane and you got tons of cars. You got to be judicial, smart, go on the science and on the with the experts and not just willy-nilly do all of that. Some neighborhoods, some parts of the city need more of X or Y. You know, there's a view, and I think we were of that view, and I think most people now, you know, there's a view that as soon as you build the freeway, you're going to fill it up. So freeways aren't the answer. Well, that's true to an extent. We haven't, you know, currently under this administration, there are all these bottlenecks because you have more and more people that are going from Stockton to, you know, the coast to work, and there are all these bottlenecks, and we're taking the position that we shouldn't, relieve the congestion on those bottlenecks because we're not for freeways. So anything taken to the extreme, and actually that's kind of what I'm focused on. I've been around, and I tell people, you know, I'm a proven problem solver, and the one thing you've learned, there are many ways to do things. And unfortunately, on one side, you know, falling off the flat earth they believe in, and the other side is stuck in the clouds with the pie in the sky. There's a middle here. There's common ground. And your point, Miguel, is that, you know, you put a plan that meets most people's needs, not everyone's, because you're never going to get that plan, but not just one group either. And there are a lot of people that need transit. And this place, look, every place in this state's going to get more congestion. So might as well plan for it now. So, you know, what I would say is if we were successful, it's because we had an all-the-above approach. And like you, when they'd scream at me at a town hall, we didn't get into, we talked about Measure R, we didn't talk about America Fast Forward. So I say, dream with me. We'll build the subway to the sea. We'll expand our rapid transit. And so we pass Measure R. I start going to town halls all over the city, to, you know, kind of like a victory lap. All I did was get screamed at. Where's your subway? We just passed Measure R. And so I said, well, hold it. This was a half penny sales tax generating $40 billion over 30 years, not a 10 cents sales tax. But they actually, because literally, I got screamed at every town hall meeting. I couldn't understand it because I thought it was doing a victory lap. And then I realized they gave me, the people gave me an idea. That's why it's important to go and talk and listen to people. They gave me an idea. So I went back to all of these guys and I said, guess what? We're going to build 30 years in a 10-year framework. 30-10 plan. Everybody looked at me like I'm crazy. And of course, I am a bit crazy. And so I went to the smart guys like him and I said, no, you're going to help me do it. So we came up with innovative financing. We went to Obama and we said, look, you got deficits and debt. You haven't raised the gas tax since early 1990s. I said, we're paying for our freight. All we want is to have access to low-cost loans and bonds, which don't score against the deficit or the debt because we pay them back and will allow us to build the infrastructure that the federal government should be helping with, the state government should be helping with, but they're not. So it was the people, you know, getting beat up at all these town halls that gave me the idea. And then I got smart people like him to come up. You know, we got all the experts to figure out how to do that. And that's what we need to do here. Fresno County should not do this by itself. The state should partner. The feds should partner. Well, the feds aren't going to part with us right now because it's California.
You might be
in a few years. In a few years. But the state can. So what do we need to be doing? Innovative financing, you know, rewarding cities and counties that put up their own money, you know, for plans that are comprehensive, that meet an all of the above strategy to deal with congestion, to deal with the smart growth, if you will. Because, you know, I imagine here is the same, but I can tell you, LA, they built their, the politicians there built their reputations on stopping growth. And that's why it was almost impossible to grow. And so this transit-oriented development, I did the first transit-oriented development district in the United States of America. I didn't come up with these ideas. I listened to smart people who shared with me what they're doing all around the world and what, you know, the future looks like.
You know, that I was just going to ask about the development side of it, because you can build the best transit system in the world, but if you don't have the housing next to it to back it up, you don't have the ridership. So, Denny, I know you've also worked on some ballot measures around housing, and maybe you also did at the end of your tenure as mayor as well. So tell me a little bit more about how you were able to accelerate some of that transit-oriented development to get that happening.
Well, one of the things that we were learning while we were working on the strategy for the Third Street Promenade was that if we didn't want to have a totally traffic-congested downtown, we better rethink the entirety of the downtown. And so we rezoned what had been largely commercial office building to become mixed-use, multifamily development with ground floor retail, in order to have a denser population in the immediate vicinity of the promenade. That began to work so well that we began to do something similar on our boulevards. And we were listening at that time. There was an organization called the Congress for New Urbanism, Peter Calthorpe and a few others, who were using expressions like transit-oriented development and smart growth and so on. And we realized that we were doing that, and we agreed that this was smart because folks who would be living in these apartment buildings on Wilshire and Lincoln and what have you could be taking the very fine transit system, the Big Blue Bus, as well as the light rail system, Exposition Light Rail, that was on its way. So that became, for us, another kind of mission, I would say. And as a result, after Measure R and Measure M, we put together Measure H with Supervisor Ridley Thomas, and then built a coalition for what was Measure ULA in the city of Los Angeles, the measure which is now about $800 million on the street ready for development. And all around the state really, as well as the county, the aspiration for new housing development in a way that doesn't disrupt existing neighborhoods began to take root, and people began to appreciate that if we built it on what are increasingly anachronistic commercial boulevards, I mean, commercial development, I mean, office buildings are empty, right? There's not going to be that much new office building development. This land can be repurposed for housing and be accessible then to transit. That makes a lot of sense. Will people gravitate to it? And oh my God, Santa Monica, right now we have 8,000 units that have been approved for development waiting to break ground. It is like stunning. It is the most highest level of housing development I've been active in Santa Monica for almost 50 years. And this is by far the highest, and it's all on the boulevards. So it's a smart idea. It's smart use of land. It helps to reduce rather than create traffic, and it helps to make sure that our transit system is fully utilized.
Miguel, do you think that we have the tools that we need to start building near transit?
Yes, we do, and we've proven that. We used to get in these arguments 4 years ago, why build on Blackstone? Nobody wants to live there. It costs too much to build infill housing. And then, of course, we start building. And when we built the apartment complex in Chinatown, we had 4,000 applications for 54 units. Down the whole town, downtown Fresno, 3,000 applications for 80 units. We built the apartments on Blackstone. They were completely filled within 30 days. The demand is there. It may not be for the person who wants a single-family suburb home, but it's a whole bunch of people that need it. Secondly, I would present to you that it is the fiscally practical thing and responsible thing we have to do. Just give you some basic numbers. We currently have $2 billion, B as in boy, in broken sidewalks. We need $3.5 billion to get our roads, existing roads, to a good standard. Our maximum bonding capacity that we can borrow against as a city is about $180 million, of which we're borrowing $100 million to repave the worst roads right now. So unlike the federal government, we can't just print more money, right? We have to work with what we have. So the alternative to simply build more roadways, more freeways that also have to be maintained, would only lead to further deterioration of existing roadways. So we have no other alternative that's fiscally sound except to build infill, because clearly the market's there. Everyone who told us there would be no market was wrong. They just all happened to be single-family developers that didn't want us to build infill. A lot of LA developers have come into Fresno and successfully built infill development because return on investment is there. So I do think we have the ability. We've demonstrated it. Every single infill development project that we've built in the city is completely full, with thousands of people on the wait list. Our challenge is to build them faster and also to upgrade the existing infrastructure. Just to give you an idea, when you do infill development, 40% of the cost is underneath the ground. The city will tell the developer, hey, by the way, our pipes are 150 years old. You need to replace them three blocks down. Our sewer lines are 150 years old. You got to replace those too. You have to replace and rebuild the sidewalks a couple blocks down. That's where you get to the 40% of the cost underneath the ground. Thanks to the investment of Assemblymember Arambula and the governor, us investing $200 million in upgrading all the infrastructure in downtown means that those developers don't have to spend the money underneath the ground. Us building two parking garages that are going to give us 1,500 parking spots means that the developers don't have to spend $100 million building a parking garages for their tenants. So, we have proven that we can do it, and I think the market and the residents have responded with the demand for it.
How do you, our LA visionaries, how do you look at success? How do you know when you've achieved the vision?
Whoa. Well, first of all, a lot of times, I mean, you don't see it right away. And yet, most people want to see it right away. You mentioned all the things that are getting built. I mean, those are my babies. And, you know, watching them 12 years, well, now 20 years after I first got elected, seeing all this stuff getting built, you know, you realize, one, it takes a long time. And I think we have to, if you, those of you, you know, Ezra Klein and Abundance, you know, they're right. Democrats aren't building anymore. Remember I said on all of the above approach? Also, we can't let the perfect get in the way of the good. There's no perfect, everybody. So in terms of, and I don't consider myself a visionary, though I did say today, I think vision is you close your eyes and you try to see the future. And it doesn't always happen the way you saw it, number one. It never happens right away, number two. And it's not going to be perfect. But what we have isn't perfect. So one of the things I've said, we need to accelerate the building of all of this, the building of housing, the building of high-speed rail, the building of light rail. It is impossible to build in this state. It's the worst state to build anywhere in the United States. That's why it's also expensive. And the red tape, the bureaucracies that we have, I mean, it's really difficult. So one of the things I think we need to do so that people can catch up and start to see it is that we got to do it faster. That's what 3010 was all about. That's how Measure M, well, actually, you're forgetting. We did Measure J and we lost by, we had 65.6%. 66.1. 66.1.
That's brutal.
And we needed
66.7.
66.7.
That's brutal.
So we needed just a few more votes. And, you know, it was the middle of the recession. So that was even worse. The other one was at the beginning of the recession. It's something you didn't mention. And, you know, you're right. I pounded the pavement. And, you know, but we also, Obama got elected. So there was an uptick in Democrats voting. So, you know, that was the other thing that really helped us. The recession, we were deep in the recession when I had the temerity and audacity to put Measure J. And because people saw that we were building, still not fast enough, we narrowly lost Measure J. So I would say, you know, we got to build faster so people can see what they're doing and buy into it. And we got to convince young people, particularly. There's a lot of young people. I think it's because, well, when they're interested in public policy too, they're going to have a beer. And by the way, I don't know how long this is going to go, but a good politician knows, don't speak too long when they're ready to eat or drink. but you know, so I'd say you got to concretize it, and they got to see it, and you just said it. All these people, when you were battling for infill downtown, all these people that say, nobody's going to come, it's not going to happen, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you got 4,000 applications for 57 units or whatever it was. You know, once you start seeing it happen, then they realize it can happen.
If I could, I think I'm going to disagree with Antonio about one point here, unless I misunderstand. I think that the housing development objective, it really does sort of depend what your objective is. If your objective is to build housing to bring middle-class community more together into a downtown environment and to support the local economy, that's one good objective, and it's important that we enable it. But if your objective is to try to ensure that very low-income people or homeless people have housing that they can live in, that market-based approach is not going to be our solution. People will die on the streets waiting for the houses.
I love when we have a discussion because actually that's wrong. And I'll tell you why. You need to do all the above, everybody.
I agree.
You need homeless housing. You need workforce housing, affordable housing. You need workforce housing. And you need market rate. Let me tell you why. And all the experts will tell you this. Let me tell you why. Because if you don't have market rate, workforce goes, the people that would have otherwise bought into market rate are going to move and drive the price of workforce. If you don't have workforce, the housing for the least affordable, it's going to drive that one up. So you have to do all of the above. You know, I did 20,000 units of affordable housing, which was more than the 12 years before me, in the middle of the worst recession. So we were focused on that. But you got to be focused on all of it. So I love that.
I agree with you.
Brothers have a disagreement here because you got to do all of the above. That's the approach.
I agree that we have to do all of the above. My problem is that the state is doing too little of the low-income effort.
I agree with that.
Most cities, and I think the reason they are is that they're afraid to use the T word and talk about taxes to pay for it or bonds to pay for it. And I'm sorry, I want politicians who aren't afraid to tell me the truth. I know that you're not going to get market rate developers building for low-income people because it's just too expensive to build and low-income people don't pay enough rent. So you better be prepared. You either figure out a public strategy to provide housing or you better get used to accepting homelessness as a permanent fixture in our communities. And I don't think we want that. And I think you agree with me about that. My criticism of the current governor is not enough show. A lot of good aspirational talk about housing and climate, for that matter. But I'm looking for the investment. And we haven't had nearly enough of that. It's all been relying upon the market rate developers and the fiction that it'll all trickle down to the very low income. It won't.
I would also add one point there. And this is from a guy who grew up in public housing, when public housing was simply just a basic house with no air conditioning, single pane windows, no dryer, you dried your clothes outside, none of that, right? Public housing was meant to be transitional, get you to home ownership, meant to be very affordable to build, very affordable to maintain. Today's affordable housing, when we do build affordable housing, is $400,000 per door. Because the state's asking, everything has to be zero energy impact, all LED, they want high-speed internet, they want all the upgrades. You end up building a product that looks like a luxury apartment complex for the cost of a luxury apartment complex. So it takes us, as a city, 5 years to build one of those units at a cost of $400,000 or $450,000 per door. That's not sustainable. And the message that we send to people is this is what you can have if you don't do anything in exchange. So one of the challenges that we've had in the world of homelessness, in 2019 when I took over the council, we had 10 shelter beds as a city. Today we have 1,000 shelter beds, and yet we have more people on the street. The difficult conversations we've had with folks, most of the shelters are my district. We've given you free rent for 3 years, all social services, 2 meals a day, all the support possible. You have to do your part now. And we've gone to a point of having to forcibly exit people after 2 or 3 years because we have 2,000 more people on the wait list to try and take advantage of that help. We started this conversation around low barrier housing. Don't require anything of the individual to be housed. Allow them to continue to do drugs, allow them to not participate in any of the services, just house them off the streets. That worked to get them off the streets. It really hurt us in the back end to get them to self-sustainability and to be on their feet. So we're now having to have conversations that are much more difficult. How long should we provide you free housing and free services for before we make room for someone else? So what I would wrestle with and ask people to debate is, if we're going to go into affordable housing, we need to make the affordable housing affordable to build. And right now it's not. It's all the conditions and criteria and demands of the state, $500,000, and this is where developers get to argue with this. I can build a single family home in the suburb for $250,000. You're building a $450,000 infill affordable housing, and they're right. And affordable housing in that sense does not generate property tax, does not generate disposable income for the neighborhood, so you can't recruit the stores and the retailers to move in or the coffee shops because there's no disposable income. So as a city, what we've done is we said we're not concentrating affordable housing anywhere. We're building all mixed income housing everywhere. And it's been a challenge. I mean, thankfully, the state passed some laws that's going to force us to build apartments in affluent areas, because other than that, the political will hasn't been in Fresno to build apartment complexes, even luxury apartments in affluent areas.
You know, I love this conversation. I love that you have some support for it. I 1,000% agree with you. We both have been council members, and I've been a mayor. Perfect doesn't exist, everybody. And if you're looking for perfect, you're never going to find it. You just said it. Affordable. In L.A., you know what affordable housing unit is? 800,000. No, that's what it is. So we need all of the above. And the only thing I would disagree, because you're right, we do agree that we need it all. But the only thing, I don't think we've even done the other. We haven't built a fraction of the housing that we need in this state. Any of the housing. Affordable, I 1,000% agree with that. Workforce, homeless, or market rate. We don't build here. That's just a fact. Anybody who knows anything about what the rest of the country is doing knows we don't do it here in the numbers that we should. And you just said it. If you're looking for perfect, you're never going to find it. You can go to Sweden and you won't find it. You can go to Norway and you won't find it. You're not going to find it anywhere. It's only hard work and it's difficult choices in the end. And leaders have to be able to be in a room where everybody's booing you, and you say, ma'am, the evidence for what you want just isn't there, because perfect doesn't exist. So we're actually not doing any of the housing. I do agree with you. We have to do a lot more affordable, but we got to do all of the above and not subsidize market rate. So when I say the state doesn't do the market rate, let the private sector do that. But at the end of the day, we have to build the housing, because this is what we've done in this state and in this country. All of us, how many of you over 60? Raise your hand. 50? Raise your hand. Okay, you know what we've done? You're the children of the greatest generation who sacrificed during the World War II and the Depression, gave you a house, but you're making it impossible for your kids to have a house, because we've supported all of these policies that make it so that a kid today can't buy a house unless their parents help them. Most young people cannot buy a house, and that's wrong. So what I've said is, whatever we do going in the future has to focus on the young people that are here. We have to make the sacrifices so our kids can have what has always been considered a part of the dream, and certainly the accumulation of wealth. And that is, have a piece of the rock. And our kids don't have it. It used to be that home ownership was the key to the American dream. Now for our kids, it's three roommates and an apartment, hopefully close to work. And that doesn't work.
You know, Mayor, I'll just add this to that. I have probably 25 to 50 neighborhood meetings a year. So I'm in front of the residents quite a bit. The number one group that's pushed back on the amount of resources that we spend on homeless residents is moms. Moms are the biggest critics of it. And what they'll tell me is, my rent used to be $800 for my 3-bedroom apartment. Now it's $1,600. And you're out there giving these guys the ability to do drugs all day, rob and steal, hang out in the park, harass the kids in the bus stop. They get free for how many years? Where's my help at? I had to pick up a second job to deal with the increase in rent. Where's my rent control? Where's my subsidized housing? It's moms who've said, I've had to do all this just to survive, while everybody else seems to, you get the benefits for doing little to nothing. And so that's the tension that we're constantly under. It's not the ultra conservative saying, why are you, it's working class folks who are also exhausted, also overwhelmed. And we as a city have been focused on the most severely in need. And it's that middle side that's really being left behind.
I love this discussion, and I want to make sure that our audience has time for some questions, if we have a few minutes. I think the easiest way to do this...
Can I clarify one thing?
Yes, of course. If you have a question, you can cue next to me while he speaks.
I really want to be clear here now. I agree that market rate housing is very important to be building more of. I'm only saying that that will not solve the homeless problem and the problem for low-income people.
Agree.
For that, we need to make other public efforts, even though, yes, because land costs are high, because interest rates costs are high, because, you know, during COVID, the supply chain was disrupted and materials are high, et cetera. It's expensive.
Trump's tariffs.
Mm-hmm. But that part of the housing requires special public efforts, and it's going to cost us money, and there will be a choice between doing that or having armies of homeless people. And I say both morally and socially, we must make the investment to solve the low-income and affordable housing needs of the homeless as well as those who can work in the marketplace.
I tell my residents this often. If you don't want an apartment complex in your backyard, you're going to get a homeless encampment in your front yard. It's that simple. Keep on fighting the apartment complex from being developed in your neighborhood. You're going to invite the homeless encampments in your front yard.
Very good. I like
that. Makes them a little bad.
When I'm in San Francisco, I'm going
to
use it.
Thank you so much to our panelists for joining us. This is such an interesting conversation. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you all for being here tonight and for indulging in a wonky conversation about transit and housing. So we'll see you on Fresno Land.
Thank you all.